Hello and welcome to the Hall of Fame Video Game Podcast, starring Matt Levy and Mike Staub. We love video games and have embarked on a journey to index the greatest video games of all time into our very own Hall of Fame. Here's the show. Hello, Mike. How are you?
Hey, Matt. How you doing?
Hey, doing great. Good, good, good. Well, we have a great one for the listeners today. We decided to go off course.
Format breaker.
Yeah, nice format breaker, a nice palate cleanser if you want to. You and me have been feeling the holiday Final Fantasy spirit. It's like we're in that mode with the release of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and you and me have been kind of recouping our thoughts. You had 16 last year, so it really are in full swing, and we thought, why not do our personal top five Final Fantasy games?
Yeah, I think this is a good idea. I think something that celebrates kind of the culmination of the series, I think, is really, really fun, especially because Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is such a monumental release this year. It's probably going to be the best game of 2024 for me at this point. And I know it's really early and that's a really bold statement, but there really isn't anything on the horizon that I think even comes close. And I think it's one of those things where it's like Rebirth is one of those things where it's like it is kind of the culmination of everything the series has done from the beginning until now, and from the beginning of Final Fantasy VII until now. There are bits and pieces of everything from the entire franchise packed into Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and there's a reason why it's got a critic score as good as it does. I think it's the second or third highest rated Final Fantasy ever.
Yeah, I think, as you said, this is probably the biggest release of the year. Games like Helldivers came out of nowhere. Games like Pal World, those games had no anticipation. They kind of were blips on the radar, and now they grew into this phenomenon. But Final Fantasy VII Rebirth was probably the most anticipated game of the year.
It was.
And it's going to be probably one of the best-selling games of the year as well, because of you're building off of the legacy of not only Final Fantasy, but Final Fantasy VII, probably the most notorious in the series.
Yeah, and it's such a good open-world game. It's impeccably designed. It's better than the remake at this point. And from what I've playing, it plays better than the remake. I didn't put it on my top five yet, because I haven't played enough of it. I'm about 25 hours in. I've played a bunch of it. I'm in chapter, I think, 6 or whatever, or 7. And I know there's a lot more to this game. And I think it would be unfair to put it there now because I haven't spent a lot of time with it. Eventually, it will make the top 10 if it continues, the top 5 rather, if it continues to play as well as it did. And I do think it's going to sell very, very well. I do think it being on PS5 and locked to PS5 is a problem for it, especially because for some reason, it seems like PS5 games aren't selling that well. It seems like there isn't as much. Well, physically, they're not selling well. All the numbers that are coming out for Final Fantasy Rebirth, people are like, oh, it's lagging behind Final Fantasy VII Remake. It's like, one, there were a whole lot more PS4s out by the time, the remake came out. And also, if you're only tracking physical numbers, physical media is dropping in general, so they're not paying attention to.
I think they say it's less than half of the sales now.
It's like, yeah,
it's growing and growing. So you're right. It's not fair to judge Final Fantasy VII Rebirth on our lists because we haven't finished it. I'm even earlier than you. I'm on the second chapter, so it's not fair to rank it, put in the top five. Although I can already tell, I'll have to make room for it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I could tell from where I'm at right now. Like I said, I'm about 25 hours in. I'm in Costa del Sol, just kind of slumming around and doing all the goofy fun stuff that Rebirth has to offer, which I was always nervous when they were going to remake Final Fantasy VII. It's like, how serious is this game going to take itself? Yeah. Is it going to have any of the silly, goofy stuff in it? And there's a bit of it in Remake, obviously. I think what they did with the Honeybee Inn was such a much better version of how it could have been. I think there's definitely some goofiness and silliness in Remake, but I think the setting of Midgar is so grim and it is kind of more of a straight shot. There is less room for you in Final Fantasy VII Remake to kind of adventure, right? You can't really go and see stuff or really explore too much. Like, there are side quests and there are side missions and they're great, but that game is much more streamlined than Rebirth, and Rebirth is so much more expansive. Now, it's an open world game, but it's like you have open world areas that are huge. And I like that it breaks it
off. It's almost like large zones.
Yes, yes.
That you can explore in. It's from what I played thus far.
A little Super Mario RPG. A little Super Mario 64 or like Super Mario Odyssey.
Yeah.
It's kind of in that area where it's like...
It almost feels like when Pokemon Sword and Shield added those open zone areas.
Yeah.
It kind of has that kind of feel to it.
It's really good. And I could tell from now that this is going to be one of my favorite games ever made. Like, I love this game. It's so very good. But in the meantime, we should talk about Final Fantasy in general and talk about our top five. I did want to mention one thing before we go on.
Please.
I don't mean to bring the mood down in the room, but we have to acknowledge this because of who we are. And we're going to do an episode about this later on. Obviously, Matt, you and I are very saddened by the passing of Akira Toriyama, who passed away very suddenly. I believe it's believed that he might have just hit his head really hard and had some sort of brain-related trauma. Don't quote me on that. That's not necessarily 100% true. I want to give respect to his family. Akira Toriyama is a legendary creator. I've been comparing him to, like, he's like the Stan Lee from Japan. If Miyazaki's the Disney of Japan, he's like the Stan Lee. And the reason why I bring him up in this episode is not just because he obviously did the incredible work for Chrono Trigger before we were really acquainted with what Dragon Ball was in America, and his amazing box art, which was kept when they brought it over with his incredible character designs. I don't think everyone realizes, and I'll do a video of this on my own, probably on Instagram or TikTok or whatever. I'm not sure if everyone who's a fan of Final Fantasy realizes that while Toriyama didn't do anything for the Final Fantasy series directly, indirectly, he is one of the most important designers, I think, to come out of Japan ever. His work has inspired Mario. His work with Arale in Dr. Slump inspired Mario. 100% Nintendo has confirmed. Dragon Quest were all designed by Toriyama. Obviously, that's the other side of the Final Fantasy Dragon Quest coin over at Square Enix. But that was a huge selling point in Japan for Dragon Quest. Dragon Quest would not have been as big a deal in Japan if Toriyama didn't do the work for it. And if Dragon Quest wasn't as big a deal in Japan, the guys over at Square, Sakaguchi and his friends, probably wouldn't have said, let's make a Dragon Quest ripoff. So Final Fantasy starts off as a Dragon Quest kind of clone. They wanted to make their version of Dragon Quest. And why Final Fantasy is more serious and more different, these guys were friends. Sakaguchi and Toriyama were close friends. And they worked together for many years and obviously worked together on Chrono Trigger, which is kind of the magnum opus of that kind of partnership. So I just want to take a minute and thank Toriyama for his work and also kind of express just how important his work is, even to something as different like Final Fantasy. So we can end it there and we could do our own Dragon Ball.
Yeah, Toriyama I just want just to add to that, the vast majority of anime, manga, RPGs, games out there that have been inspired, motivated, you can call them honorable clones. You named a lot of the properties that Toriyama worked on personally. Blue Dragon, also the 360 RPG. His touch and reach knows no bounds. I mean, it's unbelievable. If you think of Shonen Jump, the amount of manga and anime that he directly inspired, it would not exist if not for Dragon Ball.
Even Final Fantasy VII, we talk about it and talk about the influence there. But if you look at what Cloud's outfit looks like when he's kind of running around, it looks like Gohan, Super Saiyan 2 Gohan in his like blue and red Piccolo outfit. So his influence is everywhere. So we will talk more about him in the future. I'm very sad with his passing, especially because I think he still had a lot more work to do and he had a lot more incredible things to share with us over the next probably 20 years of his life. But you know what? We're lucky enough to have lived in a time where we could celebrate his art and celebrate all of the things.
He gave us so much in the 40 plus years he was working.
Yeah.
And we have so much from that, which we're appreciative for. But yes, Mike, let's get to the topic of today. Our focus is our top five Final Fantasy games. Now, we did not include things like Chrono Trigger, like anything. It's not full on Square. This is not Super Mario RPG. Anything that Square made is not included. This has to be a Final Fantasy property to be on our list. So, Mike, I'm going to hand the keys over to you. Please name the first game on your top five.
So I'm going to go 5-1 because I want to build excitement, because I think not going 5-1 is boring. I don't think you want to hear my fifth game on the top five list last. And Matt and I, we discussed this over text message quite ad nauseum, and rightfully so, to get everything correct. And spoilers, there will be spinoff games on our lists. So when Matt gave me the kind of free rein to do that, I shifted my list around a little bit. So I just want to start with a couple honorable mentions just before I get into my fifth, just to be quick about it, because I have to. One, honorable mentions, Final Fantasy IV, game I love. Incredible story, great characters, just awesome game. The first Super Nintendo game, it really feels like it. You can really feel like the change from NES to SNES. Really, really love that game. And Final Fantasy X, which I think is an excellent game. It's a game I learned to love and grew to love more as I played it, as I got older, and as I really understood how it was very different than a lot of the other stuff. And I really enjoy the characters in Final Fantasy X. I think they're some of the more memorable characters. And I think the setting is probably the most unique out of any of the Final Fantasy games to come out in that era, especially kind of like this post-apocalyptic like world. I mean, Final Fantasy VII is kind of also in a post-apocalyptic world to a degree. It's more dystopian, whereas Final Fantasy X is more like we rebuilt the world after it was destroyed. So it's a very, very good, very, very good. I'm also just going to say it right here, right now. Rebirth, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth will be on my list at some point. So I'm just going to leave it there and go with it. But my fifth game, number five, is a game that is very divisive among Final Fantasy fans. For those of you who know me, there's at least one Final Fantasy game I straight up do not like, and I would border on saying hate, and that's Final Fantasy II for the Famicom or the NES or whatever thing. I hate that game. It's got good characters and really cool like music. It was like the first narrative-driven Final Fantasy, but that game is bad. I'm not a huge Final Fantasy XIII fan, nor do I like any of the spinoffs. That is a little bit more divisive. There are people that like those a lot, and that's cool. I'm cool with it. But yeah, if you ask me if there's a bad Final Fantasy, I pretty much like the whole series except for 2. And 13, I'm kind of like, with. But my number five is a divisive game. It's a divisive game because it breaks the mold. It does things differently. It takes place in a world that they have used before, but it's very different than what people were used to at the time. It's the first Final Fantasy game that came out that wasn't your standard turn-based combat game in the main line, and that's Final Fantasy XII. I love Final Fantasy XII. I love the micromanagement kind of Xenoblade Chronicles, Knights of the Old Republic kind of feel to it. And it's kind of like this game where you have a full party. There's ATB bars that build up that allow you to do your moves and attack, but it's this semi-open world, kind of zone-related world. It's this massive, expansive world that you can explore. It's Ivalice, which is the same world from Final Fantasy Tactics, just much further in the past than the Final Fantasy Tactics version. So like Tactics takes place years and years later. It's got a weak lead character. Van, or whatever you want to pronounce his name, is not the best lead character. I think that's because he's an insert for the player. I think it's supposed to be kind of what you want him to be. But on the other side, Final Fantasy XII has probably one of the best characters in its cast in the entire series, and that's Balthier, the Sky Pirate. He has got the best lines, and they are completely all thrown away on purpose. He believes himself to be the lead character of the story. He often refers to himself as the leading man, and he steals every scene he's in, and he's fantastic. When you couple this with the Zodiac Age version of this game, where you have your characters do level up in this game, but you also get something similar to the Sphere Grid from Final Fantasy X, which is the license board, which allows you to unlock abilities and spells and all sorts of things. And in the original Final Fantasy XII, everyone has access to the full license board. So you can really customize your people like 1000%. In the Zodiac Age, you actually give each character 2 license boards based on job classes. So they get 2 different job classes that you can combine together, and it makes for a much more interesting, specialized experience. And I sunk so many hours into Final Fantasy XII and the Zodiac Age. I love this game. I'm like itching to play it again. Like after Rebirth, I'm thinking, this is the only game that feels close to Rebirth in terms of like the scope and scale and how it operates. So Final Fantasy XII's huge hit for me. Love that game. And it's partially one of the main reasons why I love Xenoblade so much.
That is a great first pick, your fifth pick on the Final Fantasies. It's interesting that you brought up Knights of the Old Republic and Xenoblade, as they are similar. Actually, what Knights of the Old Republic comes about 2 or 3 years before Final Fantasy XII. Yeah,
I think Final Fantasy XII is 2005. And I think that Knights of the Old Republic was 2002 or 2003. And what's crazy about that, too, is that to tie it all to Dragon Quest, I bought Dragon Quest VIII on the PlayStation 2 because it came with a Final Fantasy XII demo. Huh. And then I played the Final Fantasy XII demo and was like, oh, I'm going to love this game. And then I was like, I might as well play Dragon Quest VIII. And Dragon Quest VIII became one of my favorite role-playing games of all time.
That's awesome. So great first edition. I know that game is near and dear to you. I'm going to lead off my list, my number five. And at first, I didn't have a 5-1, but I can kind of pick right here. I just had my five. So my fifth one, if I were choosing in descending order, I'd go with Final Fantasy IX. Final Fantasy IX is the final release on the PS1 of those three games, and of the core titles at least. And what at the time when it first came out, I was turned off by the return to the medieval fantasy style of early games, even though it's more true Final Fantasy, what we think of the essence of Final Fantasy. At the time, I saw these younger looking characters in terms of the art style. And I was in the year 2000, I'm 14, going on 15 years old. I want those mature characters from Final Fantasy 7, 8. I want these adult scenarios. And I was completely turned off. And I came back to this game only a few years ago. I played this for the first time in the last, I think, 4 or 5 years on the Switch. And I had a blast. And this is what I feel Final Fantasy really is, this return to the medieval. If you played Final Fantasy 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, this feels more in line with what Final Fantasy really is at the heart of it. And the characters, finding out Vivi is a great character. I mean, some of the best characters, Zadine, Princess Garnet, I'm probably pronouncing the names wrong, but I found each of these characters, they had plenty of time to shine. You got to get a great backstory on each one of them, visiting their worlds. So this is a game that I really enjoyed, and I like that it kind of departed from the futuristics of Final Fantasy VII, VIII, that kind of cyberpunky look and feel.
Yeah, it was kind of something they really wanted to do. I think Sakaguchi just wanted to go back to basics there. So yeah, no, it's a great pick. I love that game.
Yeah, it's not one of my favorites. It goes number five. It just misses out on being one of my like all-time favorite games, but I had a great time with it. And I think this one would be rich to get some sort of, I know remake is ambitious, but there were rumors, I think, in the last couple of years, Mike, that you've talked about of some sort of remaster or reimagining of this game.
Yeah, they've been talking about, it was on that NVIDIA leak that remake of Final Fantasy IX was going to happen. And a lot of that stuff off that leak was true. I actually do think they will remake Final Fantasy IX, but I don't think it's going to get the Final Fantasy VII treatment. I think what Final Fantasy IX will get is we'll probably get just a really, really nice, like a Mario RPG kind of thing.
I don't think you need to change a ton.
No, I think you can have it play it like a turn-based game with the ATB system. Just make it quicker, do some quality of life improvements, and I think you've got a fantastic game right there.
Yeah, so that's my pick for number five, and that'll roll it back to you, Mike. Number four.
Number four, we're going from the PlayStation 2 to the Super Nintendo, the SNES, which... a game that I would often consider the best game in the series for a very, very, very long time. As over the years, it has shifted around a little bit. My top Final Fantasy games have changed based on kind of like how I feel about them as I've kind of grown older. And for years, Final Fantasy VI probably would have been what I consider to be the best game in the series. It's kind of the SNES kind of farewell from Squaresoft and Final Fantasy. And it's one of those games that was always overshadowed by the games that came after it. Final Fantasy VII was the media darling, and it should be. It's got the most interesting world. It's got the most relatable, interesting characters. And it was on the PlayStation, which was selling way better. It's got better graphics. It's got all that stuff. The music is actually, the music in Final Fantasy VI is fantastic. It's just not as present because it's just not as big. Now, granted, people still love Final Fantasy VI. It's still one of the most beloved games in the series and in the franchise. And Final Fantasy VI is such a weird game because it takes place in it. Obviously, it's a world that's ready to be destroyed. It's got an incredibly large cast of characters. I believe Final Fantasy VI has something like, I want to say 12 or 14 characters in your party. And they're all different. They all have different abilities. They all come set with a set of abilities right from the get-go. So you can do all sorts of weird things with it. Final Fantasy VI's Esper system, which are the summon monsters in the game. You can attach them or equip them to your characters so that they will learn skills associated with that summon and learn magic and learn spells. So everyone can kind of do a little bit of everything to a degree in terms of spells and abilities and stuff like that. But each character has their own special abilities. Like Terra, the lead character, she can transform into her Esper form because she's half Esper and half human. You've got Locke, who is a thief who could steal. You've got Shadow, the ninja, who can break the game by throwing stuff. Historically, if you throw the Ragnarok at the last boss, Kefka, the Ragnarok sword at the last boss, the game overloads and says too much to count and automatically kills him. You've got Edgar, who uses like machinery, like a chainsaw or a crossbow. You got his brother Sabin, who has fighting game style inputs that you can put in to do all these special blitz moves because he's like your monk in that game. You've got a character that draws. You have a blue mage. You have Gogo, who's a character who's a mimic. You have Mog, who you can't actually control Mog. He just does whatever the heck he wants. And actually, no, I'm sorry. I'm wrong. You can control Mog. Mog dances, and the dances do random things. And there's Umaro, who's like a Yeti, who is always berserk. He just attacks a lot. So it's a really fun, interesting game. It looks incredible on the Super Nintendo. As we look back, Super Nintendo games actually kind of look better than PlayStation 1 games in many aspects. I do love the bitmap kind of pre-rendered backgrounds that Final Fantasy VII has, but the character models and stuff like that look a little weird in 2024. And Final Fantasy VI has got a really deep and very intense story. There's a lot of choices you have to make. At the end of the game, or halfway through the game, like halfway, three quarters of the way through the game, the world gets destroyed. And you wake up and you have to travel the world again to rebuild your party. And you can choose not to. You could choose not to rebuild your party. You could just go into the last boss with like three or four characters and get wiped. But this game is just, for me, it's so memorable. And the music is so good. And the characters are so good. And the world is so good. And Final Fantasy VIII would kind of crib the Esper system for the Junction system, which is a good thing. And without all of the PlayStation flair, this game just offers some of the best set pieces in the series, whether it's the opera house scene, which is legendary. I actually saw that performed live with a live choir and orchestra at Carnegie Hall a few years back. And just a fantastic experience. The Returners are a great, great team. And I really, really enjoy this game.
Well, that is an excellent pick, Final Fantasy VI. Much less divisive than your pick of Final Fantasy XII. This is a beloved game by fans. As you said, this is the culmination of the Nintendo and Super Nintendo games. They really maximized what this series was at that point, and some people consider it to be the best. So that is a great pick as your number four. And I am going to pick my number four, a game that I think is on your list, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it. But for me, the fourth pick is the 1997 PlayStation 1 title Final Fantasy VII. And the reason I chose it for number four is the game actually on the PlayStation, I don't have as much nostalgia for it as some do. I did also play it a bit when I was younger, then skipped and played it again as a teenager. And I respect and appreciate the original game, but other properties I have more nostalgia for and hit me more in the feels.
I get it.
But this game, I mean, Cloud and Sephiroth, it all starts here. This game is massive in terms of scope. When we talk about Remake and Rebirth, it all started here. I mean, there's very little that's taken for granted as far as story and context. It stays pretty close to what the vision was for this PS1 game. And as you talked about, how the characters operate on the world. This was all sort of new at that time, and some of it hasn't aged well, I agree. Using the full motion video featuring 3D character models over the 2D pre-rendered backgrounds, it works for the most part, but some people don't think it's aged well. But there's still so much more that's done right as far as this massive story, this mature story, these wonderful characters, these crazy, silly side missions. I mean, the game has a tone to it that is so unique. And again, it didn't make my top three because there are three others that hit me more in the emotions, nostalgia, and feels than this game does. Mm-hmm. But there's just genuine respect there for Final Fantasy VII PS1.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a great pick, obviously, for obvious reasons.
Yeah, no, this one, it's an easy pick. I'm sure at some point you're going to be talking about it, but that is my number four. Mike, what is your number three?
So yeah, that time is now. For my number three, I have decided to cheat because that's how I sneak more stuff in there. And Matt, I apologize. I know you asked me not to. I'm going to do it anyway.
Break the game. Do it.
I'm going to break it. So I have Final Fantasy VII at my number three, as well as Final Fantasy VII Remake. I think now that we have Rebirth as a thing, obviously moving forward, I think the games probably need to be split up when you're doing a list like this moving forward. But sorry, folks. So Final Fantasy VII, first of all, I'm going to share some fun trivia about Final Fantasy VII. So Final Fantasy VII obviously takes place in Midgar at the beginning, and the remake, obviously, the whole game takes place in Midgar. Probably the most memorable location in the series, one of the most memorable locations in video game history with Midgar. Midgar is a little bit like New York City, right? It's a little bit like Tokyo. And there's a reason for that. The original game, the original idea for Final Fantasy VII was you were going to play this guy named Hot-Blooded Detective Joe, and you were going to be trailing. It was going to take place in New York City, and you were going to be a detective trailing Avalanche, right? And that was supposed to be like the beginning of the game. And obviously that all got scrapped. You know what I think happened with that? I think Nomura use that vibe and that feel and that New York City based cop detective thing. I think that's where Parasite Eve comes from. I think eventually that moves over to Parasite. Now I know Parasite Eve's a book. I get it. But I think the idea that had Final Fantasy taking place in New York City ends up moving over to Parasite Eve, because obviously that game is very much set in New York City. Final Fantasy VII for me was a game that I didn't have a PlayStation when it came out. My closest friends had PlayStations, and I remember going to my friend's house when that game had first come out and playing it and seeing like him run around this world and having already loved Final Fantasy VI and Final Fantasy IV and Super Mario RPG, and was like, man, I need to get this. I got a PlayStation that Christmas, the Christmas of 1998, and I got Final Fantasy VII that summer. And I was like 12 years old, and I played Final Fantasy VII nonstop for years. It was a moment for me. It was something that stood out as just an incredible experience, something that has been imprinted on my brain. You know what I mean? Like when I was in middle school, eighth, seventh grade and whatnot, there was no other game I wanted to play than Final Fantasy VII. I just wanted to play through it and play through it and play through it. And when I finally finished it the first time, it was such a monumental event. And I loved it. And I loved it and loved it forever. And as I got older, that appreciation for Final Fantasy VII naturally started to wane as I played a lot of other games and started to like other games more, and used to think that, hey, maybe Final Fantasy VII is a little overrated. Maybe it's not that great. And I didn't want a remake to happen because I was concerned. I was concerned that the fan base was going to hate a remake because I figured they would change the gameplay around. And they did. And I was concerned about that, but I'm not someone who's like turn-based or die. I don't really care. If a game is good, the game's good. And when Remake came out, I played Remake immediately and was so smitten with it. It felt so loyal to the original and so faithful to the original, while also doing its own thing and being so incredibly interesting and original and different. And the combat is so good, and the world is so interesting and intriguing, that it made me actually go back, appreciate the original Final Fantasy VII more. I think without Remake, not saying that I think the original is better than the remake, I think that the remake somehow makes the original better, and I think the original makes the remake better. I don't know how to explain it, but that's the only feeling I can get, and that's why I group them together, because I wouldn't have gone back to play more Final Fantasy VII, the original, if I hadn't played through the remake, and it's fantastic. Both games are so incredibly good, and obviously such important pieces of entertainment media in the 20s, right? It's nostalgic, but also not, and also original and amazing. And Final Fantasy VII, as you said, incredible cast of characters, incredible world, probably one of the most memorable villains, probably the most memorable cast, character by character, pound for pound. I don't think I can name a better cast across the board. So it is unbelievably good. And it's so special, which is why it was remade to the degree which it was. And the remake is almost as special, if not more special in some areas than the original. And Rebirth is like The Empire Strikes Back, right? It's the best thing that this series has ever done. And it's so good. And Rebirth was the first time in years where a game where I felt the same way I felt when I first played original Final Fantasy VII. So I love Final Fantasy VII. I've grown to appreciate it more again as something that is incredibly special. And it's a really great game. That's why it's my number three, tied with the remake.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And I love how you said they both make each other better, because I can't explain it either. But when I finished Remake, I thought I went back to the original, and I just grew appreciation for it. And I feel like the original, they enhance and strengthen each other. And it's just such a funny thing how that works here in this place. But wonderful picks. Great number three. And I think those games will be talked about, maybe a little bit later on my list. But my number three is a game that was the first Final Fantasy to really hit me emotionally and to now have nostalgia for, and that is Final Fantasy VIII. I did not play them in the order that probably most people did. I played these games way out of order. I think it goes like 8, then 9, then 1, 2, 3, then like 7, and then 10, and then 4, 5. So I'm like all over the place in the way I played these games. But 8 was the first one that I played to completion as a young teenager. And this game was one of my introductions to RPGs. I was not a big RPG guy, and now they're some of my favorite games ever. But this game had a story that I cared about from the opening cinematic of seeing Squall and Cypher sparring. It's so cool. The FMVs really blew me away at the time for what the PS1 was able to do. Because the other side, I was getting the N64, and games just didn't look like this, the N64. Everything looked kind of like, it's hard to say, just didn't have the smoothness of the FMVs that the PS1 had. These cutscenes were phenomenal. The famous one in Final Fantasy VIII is when Squall and Rinoa dance. And I must have watched like 20 different Dave Matthews Band videos on YouTube or whatever.
It's so good.
At the time, they used to take Crash or Space Between or some sort of Dave Matthews song and put it to the Final Fantasy VIII cutscenes and their love story. But every aspect of this game I loved as a kid, until you get like the traversal where you can fly around in the spaceship.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I replayed it again as an adult in the last 4 or 5 years that it actually knocked down on my list, because other games surpassed it. And this game actually took a backseat, because when I'm replaying it, I think the story does get silly at times. The whole, they're all orphans and they're raised together. I think some of it gets a little ridiculous. Even the villain, sorry, spoiler. There's some things that just don't work, but I still love the whole school system. I love that it all takes place in this school, at least the beginning, the first halves of the game, the early areas. And I love the map. I love the characters, Zell, Rinoa, Squall, Quistis, your teacher. They're just a cool, and I love the GF system. I love, even though they're long cutscenes, you can speed them up now with quality of life remasters, but I love all those different GFs that you can use, summon in the battles. And this really felt like, to me, like we're in Final Fantasy. You can summon Shiva and Ifrit and all these different characters we love. It just seems so cool to watch their cutscenes play out. So Final Fantasy VIII, while very divisive, just like you had a divisive pick, this is probably my most divisive pick. It is actually, some people really like it and some people really don't care for it. And I get that. I love the combat. I love the Mario RPG-ish, where you can attack, time your attacks in the battle. I felt more involved in an RPG rather than just putting a command in. I was actually contributing to more damage when I timed my attack. So top tier Final Fantasy game for me, while I know it's not for many others. So that is my number three pick, Final Fantasy VIII.
Yeah, Final Fantasy, it's a great game, man. It's a game that it's hard because it's a game that somehow had to follow up the impossible with Final Fantasy VII. It's got a lot of similarities to Final Fantasy VII, especially in its design, but I do think it's got a unique feel. I think that world is really cool. I think it's got the strongest soundtrack in the series.
Yeah, soundtrack's great.
Soundtrack's really, really good. And it's a game that at first, it took me a long time to warm up to Final Fantasy VIII. Is it one of my favorites? No, but it's definitely one of those games where it definitely deserves the love that it gets from its fans.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Mike, that brings us to two left for each of us. What is your number two pick?
Yeah, my number two pick would have always been my number one pick, but things changed over time, especially when we're doing a list like this. And Matt, you already talked about this one, but for years, my favorite numbered Final Fantasy game, actually probably still my favorite numbered Final Fantasy game, was Final Fantasy IX. Final Fantasy IX hit me at a time that, and in a way that I needed to be hit. It was one of those things where coming down off the gritty, cyberpunk, futuristic, modern, leather belts, spiky hair era, the 90s anime era of Final Fantasy with 7 and 8, Final Fantasy 9 was a throwback. And for those of us who grew up with Final Fantasy, like someone like me who started with Final Fantasy 1, that was what Final Fantasy was. I want to say this much. A lot of people have an opinion on what Final Fantasy is and what Final Fantasy is not. And for those who just pick apart Final Fantasy 16, well, this isn't Final Fantasy. They did the same thing with 15. They did the same thing with 12 and 13. And it happens all the time. For those of you who think that that's something new, they've been saying that about Final Fantasy since 7. Final Fantasy 7 broke the mold, and people didn't like that it moved away from the classic kind of fantasy tropes that we were so used to. So for anyone who says, oh, well, it's not Final Fantasy anymore, they changed it. They've been doing that for 30 years, folks. So get over it. Even Final Fantasy VI in some way, shape, or form, because it's steampunk.
Yeah.
But Final Fantasy IX is a storybook, right? It's a storybook game. It's got some really heavy themes. It's got themes of identity, themes of life. What does it mean to be alive? What does living mean? What does death mean? And it's delivered to us by these incredibly lovable characters. Vivi is my favorite Final Fantasy character. He always has been. I love a good boy robot. It's one of my favorite character tropes. And Vivi, for all intents and purposes, is a good boy robot. And you have the classic black mages, and you have a really just nasty villain in Queen Brané. And ultimately, her kind of liaison, or her general in Kuja. And you have Vivi, who doesn't understand what it means to die, and he has to come to terms with that throughout the game, that the black mages, who are controlled by this mystical element called the mist, or this mystical fuel called the mist, which Gant's power to magic, but it's also like a pollutant at the same time, eventually they will stop working, and they essentially die, and they're buried, and Vivi can't come to grips with that. And ultimately, spoilers, Vivi does die at the end of the game. And he writes a letter to the party that they read as you kind of wrap the game up, and he's replaced by his quote-unquote sons, who are just other versions of him as his prototype. So it's a really heavy story. Zidane goes through this thing, or Zidane goes through this thing, where he realizes he's some sort of genetically made clone. And is he even real? Does he even exist? And he goes through like this depressing episode towards the latter half of the game, where he tries to figure out like, hey, what the heck does it even mean to exist? And obviously he's got this monkey boy tail, and he goes on this adventure, but it really was what Sakaguchi was looking to do with the original game. And you fight the four fiends like you do in the original game, and you go to a lot of the same places that have the same name. You fight the same monsters, And it's just such a fantastic game. And we didn't talk about Triple Triad with Final Fantasy VIII, but Tetra Master is also a really good card game that you have in here. I love the Chocobo stuff in Final Fantasy IX. I think it's some of the strongest Chocobo stuff in the series. I love the characters. I love the music. I love the world. The cast is fantastic. Obviously, we talk about Zidane. We talk about Garnet. We talk about Vivi. But you also have characters like Steiner, the Rusty Knight, running around and squeaking everywhere. You have characters like Aiko, the little summoner girl. Armrant, who's like a mix of like a ninja and a monk at the same time.
Steiner is a fantastic character.
I love Steiner with his metal shorts.
Right from the beginning, the game starts and there's just this comedy relief. There's a softer tone.
Yeah.
And you get it right away.
Yeah. And it's just such a celebration of what Final Fantasy was. And it was great that Sakaguchi got to go back and do that before ultimately leaving Square and founding Mistwalker, which he did, I believe, after Final Fantasy X. And it's a great game. Final Fantasy IX is amazing. It's still my favorite numbered game. It's a game I definitely want to go back to, but I would love to see if they do a remake first. This is a game I would be all over a remake on day one. And Final Fantasy IX might move down the list as I continue to spend more time at Rebirth, but I really do love this game. And unless something crazy happens, I think it will be in my top five forever.
Well, that is a fantastic pick. As I said, it's snuck on the back end of my list, but there's good reason why it's on the front end of your list.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that is Mike's number two pick, Final Fantasy IX. That brings it back to me. And I went off the beaten path. I did not choose a core Final Fantasy game for this. I chose Crisis Core.
Yeah, that game rules.
Final Fantasy VII. So I came to this game after playing Final Fantasy VII Remake. And this game came to me in the form of Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion, which they changed a lot from the original PlayStation portable game, the PSP title, a handheld title. It is very different in some of the graphics, the voice acting, even some of the gameplay. They tried to modernize it to make it more like the remake series, even the branding and the naming. But what is still here is the heart of this game, which is the story of Zack Fair. Mm-hmm. And once I played Final Fantasy VII Remake, I grew this new love and appreciation for these characters that I had to live in this world. I wanted to go back into what happened before the story of Final Fantasy VII. And this game does such a good job of finding out who Sephiroth is. What is the story about this world? What is up with Shinra? And this game does such a good job of setting that table for you, but also with this fantastic gameplay. And I'd say the one complaint, there are some repetitive side missions, which you don't have to do all of them, but I did enjoy the combat enough to, I think, play almost all of the side missions. I put a lot of time into this game. It looks great in the Reunion version that you can play on just about any modern console. And the music, the story, the characters, if you like Final Fantasy VII, you're a fool to not play this game.
Yeah, I put up an Instagram post, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, that says games that where you can play as Zack are good games. And so far, that's true.
He's more likable than Cloud in a lot of ways.
He's what Cloud wants to be. That's why. Yeah. Cloud is kind of like the moody younger brother, right? Like Zack's like the cool older brother who is, but like not too cool for school. Like Zack is a cool character.
But he's a dweeb a little bit.
Yeah, but like Cloud's a broody.
Yeah.
For a bit, he's a broody kind of too cool for school character who's trying to be cool and wants to be cool.
Yeah, he's Zack, a bit of a poser. Yeah,
yeah. Zack's just a fun dude.
He's just being himself.
He's just a bro. He's not
trying to be anybody else but himself. Mm-hmm. And there's something great about that.
Yeah, he's got that like they say in the game. He's got that puppy energy.
He's got the puppy energy. He's got a great relationship with Aerith, which you get to see Aerith through someone else's lens besides just the Cloud storyline. So you get to meet and see these characters and spend more time with them before the events of Final Fantasy VII. So
though.
Yeah, I know. His story changes now.
It seems like Rebirth, you're going to get to spend more time with Zack in some way, shape, or form. I'm not far enough in the game.
Me neither. I can't speak on that.
All I know is you start the game playing as Zack. So
Yeah. Well, Crisis Core is phenomenal. It is not a core title, but it might as well. It should be. I mean, they should call it like Final Fantasy, like 7, I don't know, Alpha, or like,
yeah,
like 6.9, because it's like
Final Fantasy 7 is like its own franchise now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is a fantastic game. I originally played Crisis Core, a game that I love, on the PSP. And it was so good on the PSP. I loved it so much on the PSP, but going and playing it now, like on the Switch or the PS5, is like, it's a godsend. It's a dream.
But the naming is confusing for some people that just stick to the core titles. This game is not that much of a spinoff. It feels like it could be a core title that's essential to Final Fantasy VII. It might actually make you enjoy VII even more, which it did for me. So that's my number two. That leaves one game left for each of us, Mike. Give us the goods. What do you got?
I think everyone who listens to this show knows what my number one's going to be. And I went off the beaten path here as well. And it's Dirge of Cerberus. I'm kidding. Funny story about Dirge of Cerberus. It released in Japan, obviously, before it came out in America. And when I went to Japan the first time in 2006 to study abroad, I went into a game store. And the games for PS2 at that time were like the equivalent of, now this is in yen, so I'm not going to use yen, I'm going to convert to American dollars, the equivalent of like $60-$70 for like a new PS2 game, maybe even more. And then I saw Dirge of Cerberus, which looked really cool, already marked as a greatest hits. And
that's a Final Fantasy VII game, right? It's in universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It takes place after the original. It takes place after the original, I think possibly even after Advent Children.
Gotcha.
Where it's a game where you play as Vincent. It's a first person shooter. It's really weird. But Yuffie's in it, and like as well, she helps you out. You have a couple of the Turks in it that you work with. But when I went to the store to buy it, it was already a greatest hits game. It was the equivalent of $20. And I was just like, oh, this game won't be good. And I'm pretty sure it debuted in the United States at $20. So it wasn't good. And I'm not going to talk more about Dirge of Cerberus because I got to talk about my number one game on the list, a game that I've talked about on this podcast a lot. So I'm not going to spend too much time with it because I just feel like it's unfair to our audience. But my favorite Final Fantasy game is Final Fantasy Tactics. I had this realization a handful of years ago that it probably always has been my favorite Final Fantasy game. It's the Final Fantasy game that I have probably started and played the most. It's the Final Fantasy game that I've sunk the most hours into. My clock has timed out on pretty much every version of this game I've played. I played it on the original PlayStation, not when it came out, because it was impossible to get when it came out. I ended up buying it as a greatest hits years later for $20 and totally burning the game out and playing an incredible amount of time on it. When I eventually got a PSP, it was to play the PSP version of this game, which is called The War of the Lions, which is a remastered version with a better translation, better FMV cutscenes. This game is mature. It's kind of got a Game of Thrones vibe to it. Like, those who like Game of Thrones and like Final Fantasy will probably like this game. And it's got an incredible tactics-based combat. It's got great job system. It's got incredible way to mix and match job classes. And the PSP version adds Balthier for Final Fantasy XII, which is amazing. It adds a couple extra movies, a couple extra job classes. It's so good. It's so good to the point where I actually took the file I have for Final Fantasy Tactics and patched it so that I could play the PSP version essentially on my PlayStation. And I love it. It's probably my third favorite game of all time, maybe my fourth favorite game of all time. So yeah, this is my favorite Final Fantasy game.
That's awesome. And the biggest glaring holes in my Final Fantasy VII resume are Tactics and Six, two games on your list that I have not put enough time into either of them. And yeah, I'm very embarrassed by that.
Play Six. Six is definitely one you should absolutely play. Tactics is an acquired taste. It is a slower, it's somehow a slower Final Fantasy game than any of the others.
Because it's grid-based, and I liked Mario & Rabbids, the first one.
Yeah.
Do you think there's any crossover there in terms of my enjoyment?
I think so. Yeah, okay. I think so. I think if you like the grid-based strategy, I think you would like that a lot. Okay. It is old, though. Remember, it's a 20-something-year-old game. So it's not as intuitive as something like...
So are we, Mike. We can't judge old. We're getting there, too.
No, absolutely not. It's more in line with something like a Fire Emblem.
Yeah.
But I love this game.
No, that's great. That's awesome. I know it's had some ports over the years, but it's still not the most accessible game.
It's not, sadly. We're hoping for some kind of remaster.
Yeah, that would be awesome. So that finishes out Mike's top five Final Fantasy games. It's actually six because he cheated and added a sixth game.
That's what we do here.
That's what we do here indeed. So Mike took two games, put it on into one spot. I broke those two up because they were too good on their own.
I get it.
So my number one is Final Fantasy VII Remake, which could be my favorite game in modern times. You can throw Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom and Mario Odyssey and things, games of the last 5 years, sort of into a bowl and kind of just, I could pick and choose based on the day or the week, but this one is up there. But what it did was it brought out my love in a series that I don't even remember that I loved Final Fantasy VII, the original, all that much.
Yeah.
But it made me love the original in ways I didn't know I did. And a remake was this explanation and understanding of why things were the way they are in seven, in the original game. It brought life, this whole Midgard section that was such a small, small spot in the original game. And it let it breathe and let you understand this world and who these characters were in a whole different way. The combat is phenomenal. I had so much fun with the battle system in this game where you can at any point bring up the menu and everything moves in like 1/100th speed. I don't know.
Which is great.
It's lovely. Everything's picturesque when you're spinning around and watching it. But the fact that you can play as any of the characters, they all feel completely different in their combat abilities. The world and the story has a little more to it in terms of you get to spend a little more time with those opening characters that don't get a ton of time in the full game. And then you get Intergrade, which was the basically director's cut or extended version of the game that you get some Yuffie time.
The Yuffie time is excellent, by the way.
A great, well-built character and extra story content there. But this game looks gorgeous. Could have one of the best soundtracks as far as what they did with the original music and did with the new music. And then still had time, like you said, for the side quest. It is a slightly linear game, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
But there's plenty of side content there for you. I loved it. I love this game. I will probably do a replay of it. I spent so many hours in this game when it came out, and I wasn't ready to replay it again. But I can see myself, I don't know, I'm playing Rebirth now, so it's hard to say I'm going to go back to Remake anytime soon. But this game was so impactful to me.
Yeah, no, it's really, really good. And to be fair to Remake, Midgar in general is linear. That section in Final Fantasy VII
Correct.
Is incredibly linear.
I don't know how you could have remade that any differently, but they did such a good job with that whole area, building off of what we knew and saw of it in the original and in Crisis Core.
Yeah.
And now building into this fully, I loved going into the Shinra building and going up the headquarters.
Yeah.
That is still some of the most memorable parts of the game. The opening scene, jumping off the train and doing the bombing. There's just so many cool moments they brought to life that to this day were some of the coolest things to see 20 years later. I don't know what the exact time difference is between the 2020 game and what are we looking at?
It's like 23 years. Yeah, it's like 23 years between the two.
There's no other comparison out there of a game that was that phenomenal and was remade and is a reimagining. There's no comparison. There's no other two games like it that this has this kind of make.
No. And it's almost impossible for them to have remade it to the point where it was so good. Extending that Midgar section from about 5 to 8 hours to 40, it made the game feel so much better, so much richer. It brought it to a perfect stopping point. And honestly, that game walked so Rebirth can run.
Yeah.
And I mean, Rebirth is a masterclass video game. And Rebirth is all Remake is also a masterclass video game, and they're both doing for the series what they sought out to do. And Remake was kind of what started that domino. Remake wasn't as good as it was. I don't think Rebirth would. I don't know if it wouldn't have happened, but I don't think it would be nearly as good as it is now because they clearly just built off of everything incredible about Remake. So yeah, no man, I totally get why that would be your number one. It's definitely.
And it's a little, up there. It's a bit of recency bias. Sure. I have Crisis Core and Final Fantasy VII Remake as my top two. These are the two games that I spent the most time with in the last couple of years. So there might be some recency bias, but impact is impact, and how we digest content and media it is what it is. Now, my curiosity question before we close out, Mike, the two newest in the mainline series, 15 and 16, did not make your list. Where did those games hit for you? Because I know some people love both games, but they are a bit divisive a bit.
Yeah, they are a bit. I like 15 and 16 a lot. I played 15 when it came out and played it like crazy, like ad nauseum. Like I played that game for weeks on end and did a lot of the stuff and really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed 15. I don't quite get the hate. I don't know why it gets hate. I think it's doing an open world thing. I know people complain that like the open world is kind of bare, but the open world is kind of bare in every open world game. Final Fantasy, the open worlds in Final Fantasy on the world map are incredibly bare when you run around them. So I don't really understand that criticism. I loved just hanging out with the characters, like just rolling around in the car and going on this trip with the guys was just so fun. And their reactions with each other were so very good. And I love Final Fantasy 15.
And 15 is a bit more action focused than probably 12 and 13 were.
Yeah, definitely much more action focused. It might even be a little bit more action heavy than like Remake, because Remake still has the kind of ATB slowdown thing. Now, Final Fantasy 16 is completely action based. It's very much in the vein of like an action.
Fast paced
action RPG. But 15 and 16, what's funny about 15 is that I eventually bought it on the PC when they re-released it on the PC as the Royal Edition and probably put another 60 hours into it.
It's gorgeous on PC.
Yeah, it's really good on PC. It's almost like a different game. It's so much better to look at and plays so much better on PC. But when I played it on PC, I just kind of just walked around the world and explored, and I was grossly overleveled because I was just so interested in like doing hunts and doing jobs and all that stuff. And I like those games. Those would rank a little bit towards like the middle. I think middle.
Is it because there's no nostalgia? Could a mainline 17 or 18 crack a top 3 or 5, or is it just that they have too much heavy lifting to do, being new titles, new characters, new combat systems?
I have 12 on there. And 12 isn't really dipped in nostalgia. Yeah, it takes place in Eve Elise, but no, 12 totally blew me away when that came out. And 13, I like 15 and 16 way better than I like 13.
Sure.
So I don't know. Maybe nostalgia does some heavy lifting, maybe, but I don't know. I think they're towards the middle of the pack for me.
Yeah, they're not bad games. They're not duds.
I think 13
is probably considered by most people in the modern era the weakest of that group.
Yeah, I have a hard time with 13. I hear some people really like 13 too. I don't know. I was just over it. I was just over the way it worked. I didn't like the systems. I just wasn't crazy about it. But it's a game I'd like to revisit to see maybe if I can get some appreciation for it. But yeah, 15 and 16 I like a lot. I loved 16. 16 was on my top.
Yeah.
If not my top 3 games of the year, it was definitely in my top 5. And maybe by the time I finished it, it might have been in my top 3.
Well, that was it for us this week. We decided we were feeling very Final Fantasy these couple weeks, and we said, well, let's take that feeling and put some of that passion into a conversation. So that's it for us this week. Mike, where can people out there on the old internet find you?
Yeah, you can find me here on the Hall of Fame Video Game Podcast. You can also find me with my band, Bad Mary. Search us out at badmary.com or at Bad Mary Band on all your socials. You can find me with the Batman Tasticast, which is another podcast that I work on where we talk about Batman, the animated series. And last but certainly not least, you can find me with Long Island Retro Gaming. We have our expo running at the Cradle of Aviation Museum on Long Island from August 9th through the 11th, 2024. You can buy your tickets now at longislandretrogaming.com or search us out on the internet on your social medias at LI Retro.
Perfect. So that is it for us this week. You can please leave us a review, check out our Instagram page, and check out our back catalog and tell a friend, because those are ways that get more interactivity and get me and Mike out there for more people's ears. So thank you guys so much. We will have another episode for you in the next couple of weeks, and we will be back to entering games into our Hall of Fame.
Thank you all.
Thanks, Mike. Have a great one, guys.
Later. From Mike and Matt, thank you for listening to the Hall of Fame Game Podcast. Check us out on Instagram at Hall of Fame Pod or email us at thehalloffamepod@gmail.com. Please leave us a review and be sure to tune in next time.